Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Sawbones Mauley, along with my co-host,
Travis Buzzell.
So tonight's episode is a little unique. We have a third in-person guest, which we've rarely had. I think only one other time with Marty Nichols.
Yeah.
Physicians just, First Bank Corp.
Yeah, it was just us three.
Yeah. But then we're tapping into the virtual world, too. That's so we have another guest. There's four people on this podcast. So we're going to try to feel this out.
See how it goes.
But, you know, this podcast is all about orthopedics, private practice, and it doesn't need to just be orthopedic surgery, but it's really trying to kind of shift that pendulum back towards private practice because so many physicians have become employed. We've heard how many people are just devastated and not happy with their current work-life balance in the employed setting. And I just feel like it's gone so far askew that we're trying to kind of bring it back. And I don't think it's ever going to be what it was back in the day, but I just think that one of our goals with starting this was to show creative ways that people can be successful in private practice and also to highlight just some of the amazing people out there in the healthcare industry. And tonight, I mean, this is a very young company, but an extremely exciting company, Redefine Surgery. If you haven't heard about them, you're about to hear about them and you're going to hear a lot about them, not only here, but in the upcoming months and years. So you want to introduce our guests?
Actually, I think you know a lot more about them than I do at this point. So I hate to put it back on you because you
fine.
Just...
We could do a little ping pong.
Yeah, so. you did the intro. And I know you've been spending time with them in the OR. So
yeah, so one of my buddies here from a couple years now is Johnny Cafaro.
Yeah.
And great to have you in person.
Thank you. Thank
again.
You.
And kind of the founder of Redefine Surgery is Peter Verrillo, and he's joining us virtually. So welcome, Peter. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
I just wish you were here in person.
We all wish you were here.
Same.
That sport coat would look a lot better. And it fits. It's red carpet, right? Is that,
is that
velvet?
Is that velvet? I'm getting like a Coming to America.
It's definitely velvet.
Oh, I'm getting Costanza.
A little Neil Diamond, you know?
So what we typically do to kind of launch the podcast, like most podcasts, right? We just want to learn the 30,000 foot view of who you guys are. So Peter, if you don't mind starting, giving us, you know, a 2 to 3 minute summary of who you are, where you're from, kind of your upbringing, your educational background, and just the exciting things that you've done professionally over the past, you know, decade or so.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, I started my career in engineering when I was like 5 or 6, and I haven't stopped. I take apart all my toys and reconfigure them and reset up motors and electronics. My parents stopped letting me play with electrical equipment right around 10 years old because I almost blew up the house. And, I almost also contacted outer space at the same time. So had they let me go a little bit further, who knows? And then I went to engineering school and I really fell in love with orthopedics. It was my first internship. I was 19 years old and I was working at a company called Osteonix. We weren't even calling ourselves Stryker Osteonix back then. But we, I had this ability to work on this, this chance to work on this project called the Scorpio Knee. And it was just such an exciting thing to be able to do as an intern.
I mean, that's not a small project by any means, so good job.
Well, you know, it was one of those things where they it was a really early time for the company. I remember we were celebrating like $1 million of revenue in this one product line in knees that month. And I think Stryker mints $1 million a minute or 10 minutes or like at least an hour. So to think about the scale that's happened over this past few decades. But I really just learned to love 3D modeling and design and working with surgeons, it became my passion. So I worked at Stryker for a number of years as an intern full time. Then I worked for their Stryker Japan team for 5 years. I developed the next generation of Scorpio called NRG. Developed some hip systems while I was there too. But I kind of got this itch to start my own company in 2005. And I started a shoulder company without any idea of how to build a shoulder, what a shoulder was. And then I just wanted to do something different. And the shoulder company led to an acquisition in 15 months. There were three founders. It was, you know, multi-million dollar exit. It was a great experience to be 29 years old and
good Lord,
you know, closing a pretty big deal. And then I stayed with that company for five more years. Tournier acquired us. Tournier later got bought by Stryker as part of the Wright merger and acquisition. So at that point, basically, my career was always going back to Stryker. Fast forward 11 years in a startup, my last company, building medical technology for, you know, preoperative planning, patient-specific instruments. And now we're at a point, I left that a couple years back, started Redefine about a year and a half ago. And I'm doing something that I really wanted to do is get back into surgery. And I'm there a lot now, and I love it. And we've got big things ahead, and I'll share more of that.
One quick question I have, you mentioned the Scorpio knee. I remember putting a lot of those in during my training. Do you happen to know Dr. David Markle?
David Markle, no.
So he was a big Stryker user up in Michigan, Metro Detroit area. Mm-hmm. And he did a ton of Scorpios. And I think he still is a pretty big Stryker guy. Who's the guy that's out of Phoenix? Started Core.
Oh,
you know who I'm talking about, right? Tchaikovsky?
Tchaikovsky, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And he actually started a Core in Michigan, and David Markle kind of like started that with Tchaikovsky up there. So, but Johnny, how about you?
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Johnny's back, baby.
Johnny's back.
Johnny's back.
Johnny's
good
back.
Feels good to be back.
Back again.
It's good to have you back.
Here's
dude.
Johnny.
Here's Johnny.
I always tell people I've been in the orthopedic industry my whole life, right? I was born with hip disease called leg calf Perthes. I had to wear braces on my legs from kindergarten to second grade.
A little Forrest Gump action.
A little
right?
Forrest Gump action. I tried to run really fast. Jenny kept on telling me to run. They never came off, unfortunately. But then fast forward, I played some college football, didn't get on the field. And so then had to change the direction of my life. Got a hip replacement, a periacetabular osteotomy that failed after 18 months. And then after the fact, I'm like, there's got to be an industry that like works in medical. Like, I'm not going to be a doctor, but like, there's got to be some sort of selling or marketing. So I just started a lot of research, and I saw that there's a company called Stryker Orthopedics, and they're in the best of the best, I guess, in a sense, back in the day. And I wanted to get a part of it. And so started off as a sales associate for Stryker, carrying the full line bag. I was trauma, full line, joints, hips, knees, oncology. And then I was looking in the industry where a lot of people had dual backgrounds, engineering and marketing and sales. And so then I got into marketing for a company called Ortho Development as a hip product manager. Then kind of wanted that global experience. So I went with a company called United Orthopedics as their global product manager. Amazing. It was a great time going out to Taiwan, learning all the Asian culture and learning all the different countries that we sell to. And then went into Stryker again as their senior global product manager for the hip division. And then took about a year off, year hiatus, did a lot of self-healing, went back in and tried to figure myself out. And it's when Peter and I, we met at United, actually. He's wearing these sweet Adidas shoes at AUKUS. And nobody else wears different shoes at AUKUS. They usually wear dress shoes, and no one would wear Jordans yet. It wasn't the time,
yeah.
Right? And so then I'm like, dude, I love your shoes. And then we just bonded instantly. And we've been friends ever since for the last 4.5 years. And so when I was on my year break hiatus, he calls me out. He's like, dude, it's time. It's ready. Like, Redefine Surgery. We want you. We need you. We want to be able to grow this company and put you in a position to be the head of growth of this, this huge startup that we're starting. So
it's awesome.
Now we're here. Started at the bottom. Now we're here. Hey. Right?
No, it's incredible. No, and I'm honestly, I'm glad that that you're back in the mix. I know Dr. Molly and I, you know, had chatted over the last several months about, you know, about you and, you know, in this project that you guys have been working on and, you know, coming in to visit. And, you know, he's like, I know it's the week before Thanksgiving, but mark this Wednesday, you know, and he reminds me at the end of last week, he's like, Peter, Johnny, he's like, we're doing the podcast and we're going to try to do all four of us. And so, you know, it all is kind of coming to fruition. And so we're sitting here. So, well, welcome both. Obviously, Johnny, we've hung out.
Absolutely.
And, so, but Peter, you know, great to meet you and I'm excited to hear, you know, all about the project and what you guys are doing and kind of the, you know, the explosion phase that you were kind of alluding to. I know that we've talked just very high level about it, but, you know, I'm eager to learn, you know, a little bit more just because the baseline of what we've talked about, it seems like this potentially could be like the future of how, you know, people potentially see surgery, learn surgery techniques, not just, and where my head went was, and again, I mean, I don't know what I don't know just from what I've looked at and what I've read, but just like questions I have, like not just from the surgeon side or the resident side, but from the sales side, right? Like I'm thinking sales guys are like, it's very expensive to fly these 100% guys out to different places and train and do this stuff. And it's so vital, right? I mean, the surgeon is, I mean, obviously it like the hands and you know, everything else goes into it, but you know, and I think you could allude to this too, like, you know, your sales rep and like, you know, your team that you have in there are like so vital to like what you do. They're not doing the surgery, but like just relying to make sure you're going to have the things that you need and have backups and just be prepared for like that sort of like, oh crap sort of situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of guys are in gals are in a position where like they have the capacity to do that, but there's just that learning curve that they don't have the ability to do that. And I don't 100%. Know if this plugs into that. So
it does to a bit. I mean, Johnny was telling me on our drive down this morning to the hospital, because I was like, all right, I've seen glimpses of redefined surgery and Peter, I want to pick your brain at nauseam here. but I don't know when we cue the Iron Man music and like,
I am Iron Man.
And the Jarvis piece. But, so Peter, can you give us, what is redefined surgery? What led you to kind of found this company? What's the mission? What are the goals and all the different facets? Because I think what a lot of people are seeing is just a snippet of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's very intentional. We have a pretty big vision. It goes out pretty far. I think what we're sharing right now is kind of like the fun opener, and where we intend to go is kind of like all encompassing. So I'll kind of start with like the founding story. I had been, after my last startup, I joined a robotic surgical company for about, you know, 60 days. And I was the CTO. I quickly realized I'm not a CTO, I'm a CEO. I need to be able to make all the decisions I need to make. So I left, and then like 2 days later, I said, okay, I'm going to start a new company. I'm not going to try to work for someone else. And I had this idea that had been percolating. Johnny and I had talked about it about, you know, 2 years before when I left my startup. And it was one of these things where I originally thought of this idea of like, there's no way for us to ever achieve revenue in 5 to 10 years, the way I originally thought about it. And after time in the robotics world, I realized, you know, there's actually like a giant opportunity in robotics because the cameras they're using are just so archaic. So when I started the company, it was really around like a new idea of a camera that could be used in surgery. But then, you know, there's always these like things that happen that like snowball. Once you start with an idea.
Evolution, right?
Evolution. So, yeah. So like, in April, we started and just ideating. And I reached out to an old friend, Ignacio. I said, listen, I've got to do this. You want to do this with me? He's a biomedical engineer, but he got onto the operational and finance side. He's like, yeah, let's do this. This is going to be exciting. We started talking about it. And then about 6 weeks in from when we formed the company to I get a text message from my mother. And she's in my driveway. And she says, I don't feel good. Take me to the hospital. So I take her to the hospital. She was having a heart attack. And I spent the next 8 weeks taking care of her and building the company and reformatting what I was thinking. So, you know, she had this surgeon who was incredible, spent 12 hours taking care of her, and he's easily in his 60s, very hard surgery to do. And she came out, you know, in just so well. She did so well afterwards, and she's still doing well. And I realized that there's this thing that happens when we see surgeons. And you guys may not know it as a surgeon, but we always say, like, wow, he's got great hands. Like, when you come out of a surgery and you're really impressed by a doc, that's kind of how we describe it. And I was thinking a lot about this. Here's a surgeon with all this experience. He's got great hands, saving my mother's life. And that's what I've seen for decades now, attending surgeries with surgeons like yourself. And it's so special. But there are many surgeons that don't have great hands, that are either still learning or need some more help. And I was like, how do we transfer that knowledge from a surgeon who's about to maybe retire? How do we transfer that knowledge over? Well, it's done through fellowship. And fellowship is very non-scalable, right? You have a couple fellows through the years. You're there for a very, you know, brief moment in time compared to your overall career. And then you're gone and you're on your own. You get a handshake and a piece of paper. How do we transfer that knowledge and continue to transfer that knowledge and share and put that experience into like a database, into an AI? And I think that's where this all started to come about. It was the combination of going through that personal experience with my mother healing and having surgery and the ideas of a smarter, intelligent vision system in the OR.
No, I think it's a brilliant idea. I love the concepts. It's funny how this all came about too, because I know this is one small piece of it, but Johnny, I don't know how many months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, sent me a text message, was like, hey, check this out.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like your little teaser. And I'm not going to share anything that you guys don't want to share, but it was like a 3D. The best way I could explain it is like that camera that's on a football field that's hanging from the four cables. 100%. And it looks like it's great footage. And then all of a sudden they start running the playback and things start spinning around. And you're like, how are they doing this? And seeing it from different angles, but it looks like it's one camera that's doing this and the camera's behind the quarterback. So how are they now down the field and seeing all these different things? And so he's like, yeah, we're using these Meta Ray-Ban glasses. And I was like, yeah, I'm very familiar with those because I started using them probably about 8 months ago in the OR because, and we, again, part of our conversation to the hospital today was I've always been really, really huge on education, whether it's educating my patients, educating other surgeons. I've trained a ton of surgeons over the years with direct anterior hip replacements, kinematic alignment. Now we're getting into what I call the comb over or subvastus surgical technique. These advanced surgical techniques that either people haven't been exposed to or aren't comfortable with, and they need more exposure, more repetition. And it's hard to get everybody to a lab, right? Because, I mean, just we're busy. We have families. We have busy schedules. And everything that I've ever seen, whether it's a surgical video, and I've had all my surgeries taped by a professional video crew, the quality's great, but you don't ever get the point of view that I have when I'm standing there holding the knife and in a hip or in a knee. So I've tried everything from GoPros on light handles. I've tried to mount a GoPro on my helmet. I had one of my assistants go in a Striker suit holding my iPhone up through the visor, the whole case, standing right next to me to try to get my perspective.
That sounds safe.
Yeah, very safe.
No, he was sterile. It was all inside.
No, I'm just
hilarious.
But his hands were going numb. You know,
he's like, can you move my phone so I can see that?
And then recently, just within 8 months or so, I saw those Meta Ray-Ban glasses. I'm like, well, I mean, I think they were $295 or $300, something like that at the time. So I was like, this would be a worthwhile investment. So I bought them. And I was amazed at the quality of the video and the audio. And I started recording videos. Now, the version that we use today was upgraded. So we had 3 minutes of video. I had 1 minute of video. So I had to do all these surgeries and keep starting the recorder and then edit it out. But that, in addition to these other things that you guys are doing. Yes. I mean, it's just, this is a game changer for medical education, for surgeon education.
Definitely.
But there's, again, I don't want to go beyond what you guys are comfortable talking about, because I know that this is a strategic release, but, I mean, you guys have visited how many surgeons now?
I think we're at 10 to 12 surgeons. Yeah. I think the excitement is, you just nailed it on the head, is medical education, sales education, surgeon education, company education, right? It's all encompassing. And I love how you described it. It is that Monday night football 3D immersive experience where you're coming in, a fly on the wall, and rotating and flying in through. And the beauty of it is that we're using off-the-shelf technology, right? The Meta Ray-Ban glasses are off-the-shelf technology, and it's helped us be able to get that surgeon point of view. But we're also coming up with our vision system where we come in and record 6 to 8 to 9 iPhones, because the iPhones do the best recording for us as well too, and they have the best optimization. And then we can be able to create those splats where it is those 3D immersive splats that we're creating in the meantime as we're building the data for the Jarvis, right? As we're creating the data for the
AI. I don't want to go there, but can you talk about that, the Jarvis piece?
Peter, do you want to talk about the AI piece that we're...
And before we do that, can we do something really cool?
Sure.
First time ever on the podcast. And this is, I think we need to put some gear on.
Let's do it. Yeah, here we go.
And we're going to show everybody what we're talking about,
because
we're
going to incorporate status that report.
Here we go.
Into the podcast.
Upgraded right now. Hey, here we go.
Start recording.
I'll make sure these are on.
Yeah.
Are they charged? Are you kidding me? These ones are dead. Oh, no, they're on. Just want to make sure we're synced up so I can.
There you go. Oh, wow. This looks great on you. You look like the new Superman.
What's up, guys?
1980s Wayfarer.
Yeah, they call me, Clark Kent.
So if we could, what I'd like to do is get everybody, because no one's ever seen this room.
Yeah.
And like what it looks like from this side. So that little thing that I started was called Through My Surgeon's Eyes, because I wanted my patients and other people to see what I see and get that experience of what it's like doing a surgery. Well, let's get the experience of what it's like doing a podcast.
Hey, yeah. Meta,
there's record. Lights.
There's wine.
Hey, Meta, record.
We've got this amazing room.
Hey, Meta, record.
Man, look at that. We're all recording right now.
Yeah.
Everyone's Johnny. Flashing. What's up?
There's T-Buzz. There's Peter.
There we go.
So you want to tell us a little, give us a little Jarvis background?
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea is that we'll one day, I like to look at the future first, and then, you know, we can kind of walk into steps to it. I envision, like for you, one of your mentors is Dr. Lombardi, and I envision you having the option of talking to him during surgery and having him in your ear, maybe right here through the glasses, to discuss, you know, a question you might have, to theorize, hey, should I consider this? Should I do that? Maybe for him to remind you to like extend your elbow a little bit further. You're going to get tired in that position. Whatever it is that your mentor would have done, and then that's one piece of it. You could also just say, like, here are my 5 great mentors that I want to see and hear from. And I could see a world where they are helping you, learning from you, you're learning from them. It's a discussion. But this is their AI. This could be, you know, beyond their retirement, but you're having that conversation. They're helping you. They're showing you things and vice versa. You're showing them things.
And it's real time. The cool thing is like, we're going to augment reality with AI. And so you can be able to see the line cuts if you're 1 degree varus, 1 degree valgus, right? If you're tight inflection, tight extension, and you're going to be able to have your mentor in your ear be like, hey, you need to be able to cut a little bit right here. Or it's like real time talking to you. So the world renowned surgeons, or the really great hand surgeons, as Peter was saying, almost like a security blanket, like, hey, we got this. But like, if you have a question real quick. But then the community surgeon or somebody that doesn't have that, like they didn't get to go to Lombardi, they didn't get to go to somewhere great to be able to learn, they can have these glasses and be able to have this predicament and like go through it and be like, okay, man, I'm a lot better surgeon because of this. Right?
I will tell you, that one of the most terrifying things, I'm going to start this again because I only got the 1 minute once. You know, when you first come out, and there's a quote that I absolutely...
Johnny just got me the 3 minute once. I'm just saying,
so. Yeah, I'm like chopped liver over here with these 1 minute glasses. Anyways, by the way, those are mine.
Yeah,
that you're wearing. Yeah, just, yeah. I'm going to wipe them down with some alcohol pads when we're all done here. But there's a great quote that I recently saw, and it goes something like, you know, ask a surgeon who he thinks are the best three surgeons in the world. And the response typically, at least for me, is I can give you the number one, but giving you the other two is kind of hard
because
I'm the number one. And that's just, you know, a little side humor. But that being said, is like when you come out of your fellowship and you're in that OR for the first time. And yeah, I did 1,000 cases with Lombardi and Keith Barron. And, you know, you're, I don't want to say nervous while you're there doing it, but you at least have that security blanket knowing that they're there or in the next room and coming over shortly. Whereas that first case or two, you're like looking left, looking right, and the crickets are chirping. Whereas this gives you that a little bit of a security blanket, that comfort to know that, like,
definitely,
hey, I'm not alone. And you're never really alone. And Peter, you responded to one of my LinkedIn posts, and I knew where you were going with this about that. And I said, hey, I've actually called Lombardi during surgery. I've called Phil Frendak during surgery. Phil Frendak has called me during surgery. Like, we are a community. We're brothers in this together. It's a hard occupation. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of, and it doesn't mean that you're a weak surgeon when you feel like you need maybe some reassurance, like, you know what you think is right or what you're going to do, but to hear someone else say it or verbalize it or see what you're looking at and be like, hey, maybe you want to do this, or maybe think about that, or hey, Ryan, I think your plan is perfect. Stick with it. So I applaud you on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, what's coming up for me, like, and now that, like, I'm getting the full vision of what this is, and you've always said this, you know, Dr. Molly always tells me, he's like, you know, my gut normally is always right. You know, and sometimes being in, you know, particularly what you do, right, with what we do in conversations, it's like, oh shit, maybe I can step out. Can I phone a friend real quick? And, you know, right? It's different.
100%.
But, like, can you imagine, like, you know, there's a patient under anesthesia on the table. There's a lot at, you know, yes, thank you, sir. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot going on there. And so I think from my perspective, the biggest piece to, you know, the ability to have that potential access is, like, it's not a pride thing at that point. It's just like, you know, sometimes just having that reassurance, like you said, and just being like, you know what, I would never have had the ability to do this before. And not only just from you, like, as a surgeon who's tenured and been doing this a long time and has done over 10,000 joints. And, you know, the things that we've talked about is, like, you know, what about that new fellow, you know, and whether you're a fellowship, you know, destination, like, you know, Lombardi or, you know, whatever that looks like. It's just like being able to, like, create maybe a platform, you know, with Peter, your, you know, your vision of, like, being able to, like, extend that fellowship into practice for an extended period of time. Like, for me,
definitely.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. It just, it makes a ton of sense. And the other thing that comes up for me is, like, and maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to step on toes, but I feel like there are a lot of surgeons in the world that trained a certain way, and then things evolve, right? Like, the things that we're talking about, I mean, imagine when you were in medical school, it was like, this is like science fiction,
I mean,
right? Like, not to say that it's not possible, but it was not something that we were, like, talking about, like, today sort of thing. And so for me, it's just like, I feel like, you know, there's a surgeon pride thing, and there's, like, the technique, because I've seen the arguments on LinkedIn, right? Like, the robot versus the non-robot, the comb over versus the, you know, whatever else someone is doing, right? So there's all these things.
AMA, right?
Yeah, okay, but yeah. Like, I feel like there's all of this unique perspective with this technology to give surgeons the opportunity to be able to see it in real time and through your surgeon's eyes.
Yeah, through that perspective, from that perspective.
To be able to make more of a, like, informed decision, or, like, get all of the information before just being like, I'm doing it the way I've done it because this is the way I've done it, versus maybe there's a better way to do it, but I don't want to admit that because I'm not going to just transition to that. Does that make sense?
No, 100%. It does.
Yeah. Like,
that's the cool thing is what we're doing right now in that data collection stage. Mm-hmm. We are in that process of going out and seeing the people with the best hands and be able to learn from them. And so then they can make a more informed decision
sure.
through the AI because we've collected so much data through that. And so they can be able to have that option like, hey, here's an option that you haven't thought about. AI is telling them right then and there because we filmed from 50 or 30 other surgeons from that position or that viewpoint, and it's worked well for them. Because the end goal for all of us in the medical industry is better patient outcomes, right?
For sure.
That's yeah. all we want. And we want to make sure that we're doing that and having that set example. So if we do give you that extra thing that you never learned or something along the way, I think it's going to benefit everybody.
Well, just a real brief example of this, like, you know, a surgeon telling a surgeon one thing, just the post that I posted yesterday on LinkedIn was about a failure yeah. of a case that I had. And I had I'm not going to name his name, but I had a rep that reached out to me privately and said, hey, have you ever thought about maybe instead of using a short stem, especially because I do KA and that tibia is in what a lot of MA surgeons would be say is a lot of varus, but yeah. it's anatomic. It's not varus. It's, yeah. it's where that tibia should be. But how about a cone instead of a short stem? You don't worry about impingement on the lateral cortex. I was like, never thought about that.
Yeah.
Right. And then I had another rep reach out to me publicly and say, hey, have you ever thought about a cone? And I'm like, man, like next time I come into this situation, I'm going to think about a cone. Like, so Peter, I guess where did this come from? I mean, you've been in surgery a long time. You've been in orthopedics a long time. I think it sounds like your mother's health dilemma was a bit of a you had started the company prior to that, but like did that change your direction at all?
Yeah, it really helped me realize while I could just focus on what I was originally thinking, which is like a new way of using optical vision for navigation and robotics, I thought much broader, and it gave me the kind of inspiration to really focus and say, we should do this. Like I've assembled an incredible team of engineers and, you know, marketing and salespeople, and we have the potential to solve this problem and do this. Like very few people have all the pieces. And, you know, this is now my third startup. So after you've done a couple, you've made a lot of mistakes. So you're like, okay, I'm not going to make those mistakes again. I'm shooting really high, knowing that we were going to, you know, aim for the stars, hit the moon. But then a few years later, we're going to be on Mars. And a few years later, we're going to, you know, be at the edge of the solar system. So it was definitely an evolution and a bigger opening, you know, mind-opening experience to have to go through that. That just made me say that we can't wait. Who else is going to do this? There's really very few companies tackling this in the way we are.
So you talk about assembling that team. And, you know, when I started my practice in 2018, I assembled a team. And that has been probably one of the most gratifying experiences, but also one of the most challenging experiences of my career. I mean, doing surgery is one thing, but being a business owner and being a an entrepreneur and starting companies, and I've started several, not to the level that you have, but a medical practice, and started a concierge company and started some other cool projects that we have going on. But what have been the keys to finding the right teammates, right? I know history plays a part, but to me, it's like building a literal team, say a football team or a basketball team, where you know you can only have like one Michael Jordan on that team, right? Two Michael Jordans is not going to work, right? So you got to find your Scottie Pippins. You got to find your Dennis Rodmans. You got to find your Steve Kerrs. You got to find your role players. You got to find your Phil Jackson. So who are you? Are you Phil? Are you Jordan? And how did you build this team? Because Johnny was telling me you have like 30 people on this team.
No, it's large, but it's not yet 30. We're on our way though. Right now we're about half that. But you know, a year ago there was two of us, three of us. Three of us. So I'd say that I'm definitely not Michael Jordan. In my previous life, previous startups, I was always the Michael Jordan. I was always, you know, driving from the court. And the thing I realized is that that limited the rest of my team because I didn't give them a chance. You know, I was scoring 54 points in a game and they were, you know, getting a couple rebounds and scoring a few, you know, I wasn't preparing them. So this time I really see myself as the coach and,
got Phil here.
Yeah.
Phil.
Got to just find the right people. And, you know, it's about like how they're going to work together. So I was thinking for several months how Johnny was going to fit in with the team. And as we were hiring more people, like, wow, you know, he's going to really complement this person and he's going to really work well with that person. And once we had the ability to bring him on, once we raised a bit more capital and started growing the team, you know, it was like just the right timing. So we were talking for a while, right? And that's the other thing I think I've been better at. There are folks I've been talking to for, you know, several months and I'm letting them know, hey, it's getting close. This is where we think it's going to happen. This is the inflection point. I'll be able to offer you a real job. But I, you know, I'm touching base with them on a regular basis. And you have to cultivate those relationships. It takes time. But yeah, hiring is critical. In the early stage, it builds the foundation for your culture. And
you brought up the big word I wanted you to say, which was the culture.
Yeah. And then you just let the culture really drive everything. I love the fact that you said sports team, because a lot of people say, oh, we're a family. Like, we are not a family. like, we love each other. Like, I love Johnny like a brother, right? But this is a sports team and everyone's got to play at the highest level. And sometimes you've got to, you know, let people go who aren't world class if you want to be, you know, the Chicago Bulls, right? And the key is, how do you keep them? Like, think about how many years they played together, you know, Pippen and Jordan. That was a great coach because they kept the same people in the game and making each other greater and greater every year.
It's tough, yeah. Right? You're managing egos. You're managing, you know, just personalities. You're managing expectations. And to get all of that to jive and go, like, row the boat in the same direction has always been, I think, one of the biggest challenges that I have faced as a business owner and entrepreneur. And Travis has been, honestly, probably one of my biggest advocates and co-pilots in helping to navigate those waters. And I really wouldn't want to be doing it with anybody other than him. I mean, it's one of the main reasons I wanted to start this podcast with him is because we think very similarly.
Sure.
We have similar, I think, goals and visions, and he understands like what makes me tick. And I feel like you and Johnny and some of your other key people, you know what makes people tick. They know what makes you, Peter Varillo, tick. Yeah. And the common goal and mission of your company, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, it's critical.
I think what Peter does is a great job as finding the talent and letting us do what we need to do. And that's the biggest thing as a leader, as a coach. You find the talent and you let them do. You don't micromanage. You let them do. I mean, listen.
So is he Jerry Krause now or is he Phil? Yeah,
I don't know. No, he's definitely not Jerry Krause. I mean, he's definitely a Phil. He finds the talent and lets them do what they need to do. But the cool thing is like, I have a unique set of skills that I can be able to grow a brand and be able to create this kind of FOMO effect, right?
Yeah.
And some people appreciate it and some people don't. And I get that and that's fine. But when Peter was tapping me and said, hey, listen, I know your skill set and I know what you can do and we need to bring brand awareness and this kind of like this explosion towards Redefined Surgery.
Hey, dude, you're magnetic. Yeah. So
and like, thank it's you. I hair, appreciate that. Honestly. It's the flowing hair now. It's the long hair now, right? Yeah. But like I asked him right before I started, do I have any handcuffs? Like, and he's like, no, dude, you are green light. Do what Johnny does. And that is a boss, a leader, a coach to allow me to be able to be who I need to be. But that's not just with me. He's allowing all of us on our team to do that. And that's rare. You know what I mean?
Well, that was, again, I hate to go back to it, but Phil with Dennis Rodman, right?
Yeah, because
he was...
Yeah, let him leave for 2-3 days.
He has to go to Vegas.
What's going on? It's like, go do you.
So
you
but I mean, come San Antonio back. Let him go. Yeah. Detroit let him go because he was a liability,
yeah.
Right? But Yep. Phil saw his upside.
Yeah.
He didn't need to score 15, 20 points a game.
No.
He was a role player. He was going to come and do his thing. He was going to be flashy about it. He was going to do some eccentric stuff. But, like, yep. I'm not saying you're Dennis Rodman. But
Carmen Electra?
I mean, I'm down with Carmen. I'm okay with that.
But, like, most of those guys are.
Single data five.
I don't think Michael's ever going to see this because, MJ, I love you. But, I mean, come on, dude. Let's be transparent. If there was social media.
Did you bring the shoe, by the way?
It's in my car. Yeah. Yes.
If it's raining.
Yeah, but if social media was a thing, Dennis Rodman would be more famous than Michael Jordan.
Well, Michael Jordan probably wouldn't be like as polarizing as like people like admire Michael Jordan.
Right.
Michael Jordan is a person too. And absolutely. He has vices.
Yeah.
DraftKings. Sponsorship. No, seriously. I mean, there's just like things that you learn over the years about. But again, I mean, I feel like what we're alluding to with Peter and, you know, just his, you know, from what I'm gathering, just like number one, I mean, like for me, Peter, and again, it's just to me, it's trust.
Yeah.
Right. Like you have like, these aren't relationships that happen overnight. You've been in the industry and, you know, a bunch of different spaces for, you know, several years, and being able to cultivate that culture and that relationship to being able to trust the people around you. I mean, and maybe you can speak to that more about the trust piece, but for me, I mean, that's what's coming up for me. That's what I'm hearing. It's like, yeah, let Johnny do Johnny, but you trust Johnny to be Johnny, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say that like there was this really big eye-opening moment for me this summer. I went to a Tony Robbins course called the Rapid Planning Method, and they had this great session on leveraging versus delegating, and I loved that perspective. So I used to hire great people, good people, right? And I would say, okay, go make this thing happen or that thing happen. I would delegate. And what happens with delegate is you're not close enough in the early days. So they don't fully understand what you're trying to do. And they come back and they show you something and you're like, that's not what I wanted, right? And sometimes it's hard to like hold the face. I used to be bad at that. Sometimes I would just get this like really yesterday. Curious face like, what am I fucking looking? Oh, sorry.
You can say that. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And then it was bad. It was bad for them. It was bad for me. Now, like that course helped me think about leveraging. So we spend a lot of time early on, or we have a new project. We'll spend a lot of time really understanding it together. Like me and Johnny will say, hey, this is how we're going to do it. And this is what we're going to do and how we're going to talk about it. And then we spend less and less time as he starts executing. And then it's just regular connection. We're not spending a lot of time on it. I'm not looking over his shoulder, but we're engaging on it on a regular basis. But without the, oh no, do it this way. Add a comma here, right? Like my old mentality was way too involved.
What changed? Like, yeah. Did you do ayahuasca or what?
I think you struck a nerve with the punctuation thing with my buddy Ryan over here. So
yeah. Ayahuasca.
You didn't know that was coming in here, did you?
I love that part. Yes.
No. So, no, but seriously, in all seriousness, like, because we've all been through that. Like, we look back and there are a lot of things in my professional career that I look back on, not that I would have changed anything that actually happened, but the way that I did it,
for sure,
I would have absolutely changed it. Like, yeah. I could have been more patient. I could have been more kind. I could have been a little bit more collaborative. I could have been all these things. Like, what was it that your third startup created this, I guess, self-reflection where you're like, okay, I can do better or I can change this?
It was one of the hardest things I ever had to do was to leave my last startup. So 11 years of building a company, a strategic exit, you know, in the works, 5 more years of work to make it happen, right? And then it was just the right thing to do is to leave and move on. And when that happened, I really did a lot of self-reflection because I thought I was going to see it all the way through. I thought I was going to lack, you know, when we started it, I thought I was going to ring the bell one day, right? You know, you have these big, wild ambitions. And to step away from a company that you had started was a tough one. And took a lot of soul searching to understand what did I do right? What did I do wrong? One of the things I did was I read my Glassdoor ratings, which is painful as a CEO sometimes because they're anonymous. You're not sure who wrote them. You can sometimes kind of infer based on what they're saying, but there was a few comments around things that I took to heart, and I really wanted to be better the next time. So I've done a lot of education on my own. I have not done any plant-based experimentation or journeys yet.
Yeah.
Experimentation.
We're memorializing this podcast with yet.
Thank you.
Peter, if you do it, I'll do it.
So. Mom watching, Peter.
Guys, I will hold space for all of us because I've done it all.
I've got space.
We've got the space.
Yeah.
Peter, we figured out where we're doing our next retreat.
Yep.
It's deep in the woods in northwest Pennsylvania.
Love it. I'm out.
Treehouse.
I'm definitely out.
So you live, you learn, you figure out ways that you could have done it better. And
the cool thing is with Peter, if I might step in real quick, is though, so I disappeared, right? Like I had to go on my own journey, but I only had a few people that had my new number where I disappeared to. And Peter was a constant communication in my life, and he could see where I was going through, and we were going through some same battles at the same time and same different stuff. And he was able to meet me at where I was at, and vice versa. I could meet him where he's at, and he could be able to have an understanding and be able to like have aha moments or epiphanies. And I think that was really cool of us to be able to grow that relationship and that bond together, because you don't just change overnight, right? It takes periods of time and different things and different like situations that come into life. And to be able to have, I'd say like it would be like every few months we'd check in with each other, and I'd be like, I'm not doing well. And I would just straight up be honest and like, I am struggling. This is where I'm at. And I think having that honesty, hearing from somebody else and vice versa, him saying like, I'm not doing well either. This is hard. And it's like Jelly Roll. Have you guys heard the music country artist?
Yeah.
I'm not okay, but it will be okay.
You have to live under a rock not to know who that guy is.
Right? Now. Like that guy is killing it right now. Yeah. But like at least he admits that he's not okay. And at times I think it just built relationship, and I could see him softening from different Peter than at first. And when my first week
started, I would say he's not softening. He's lost a ton of weight.
Oh, yeah. He's hardening. He's crushing it, right? The best thing, he's just crushing it.
Boom.
But one of the first weeks I was on at Redefined Surgery, and we were having a very good conversation, but there were some things that needed to get done in the video. And we were just having this discussion, and I could see the old Peter like just like getting upset or frustrated and walking away or hanging up from the phone call. But he just like handled the situation so well. I'm like, whoa, like Peter has come a long way to allow like the conversation to flow and get it done and just tackle it instead of blaming or getting mad. Like it was a really cool experience. And so I think it just takes time over that and that trust period that you guys talked about. Yeah. But like it wasn't just one thing. It just like it kept on coming into each other's frequency, keeping in our energy space, like all that different stuff. So I appreciate all that he's done, the work that he's gone through, and to be able to be the leader, the coach that he is now. So I'm excited to keep growing, redefine.
I'm like, pause.
No, I mean, that was powerful.
I'm like, deep. I'm like, I'm going to transition and back in the redefine stuff, but I'm like, wait, I don't want to like ruin a moment here for anybody.
No, I mean,
cool. I mean, no, I appreciate that too, Johnny. I mean, because, you know, quite honestly, I mean, I know we get into like the business side and like all of the like things are advantageous for private practice. But like for me, one of the things that's come up, like if you've watched a podcast with Ryan and I on it, you've not all of them, obviously, because some of them are light and fun, but, you know, some of them do get pretty deep. And there's been tears shed and, you know, there's real emotion. And I think the one thing, and I think Peter could probably allude to this too, I mean, and especially in your career as an engineer and, you know, I feel like engineers and surgeons are kind of like very similar. I know the byproduct is different, but it's just like everyone thinks, you know, you guys are fucking robots.
What, tough people to deal with? And
Well, generally speaking, but like, it's one of those things where, you know, for me, I just feel like what comes up is just like, you know, it's like it's regimented. It's, you know, there are the processes and this is how we do things and we're not going to change. And this is how it needs to be every single time. And like, what I'm learning more and more, like through this podcast and through these conversations that we have is like, you know, on the other end of like that spectrum are real people. who go through real stuff, right? Doesn't matter what career path you take or how much money you make or how successful you are, you know, tragedies happen to everyone. They're not,
we're all humans. Yeah. We're all in on different journeys, but we all feel pain. We all struggle. We all, like, social media is great, but it portrays things as
perfect,
you know, fantasy
butterflies
land, a lot of time, right?
It's and, all bullshit.
And it's why I posted that post yesterday. It was just like, hey, no, everyone posts like great stuff, right? Yeah. Look at what I did in this case and look what I did here. And it's just like, I had a failure, and granted, it was a 5-year failure, so it wasn't like an immediate post-op failure, but it's still a failure.
Yeah.
And I look at failure as like my biggest fear. But where you learn the most and where you grow the most are from, it's not necessarily a mistake, but it's when things didn't go as planned.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to be confident enough in yourself to look back and say, all right, this is what happened. Admit it, share it, and ask others, like, hey, would you do anything different? Like, and what would I do differently in those situations?
Well,
and I mean, your reflection here, Peter, is just great. Like, your startup, your second startup, and like, you're redefining Peter Varillo is what you're doing.
Like, literally.
Seriously. I mean, this journey that you're on, I've never had the opportunity to meet you in person yet. I can't wait for that opportunity. Are you going to be at CCJR, by the way?
Yes.
We're going to meet in CCJR.
We are.
It's a couple weeks. So
the cool thing is, like you just said, is failure is not the end, right? Because, I mean, I love going back to Edison. How many times did he fail with a light bulb? Like 999 times. And on the 1,000th time, he found that the horsetail was the key to lighting the light bulb. But if he didn't find all those other failures, he would have not found out that the horsetail was the answer.
How many people are going to do it 1,000 times, right? Like, just, that's the, right? Like, to me, I mean, is like the amazing thing is like exactly. That persistence, that grit, that determination.
So I think is it Tim Grover? He's the one of the, like, the trainers, with Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So there's a group of these guys. There's another podcast, and I always get those Tim Grover and this guy confused. But anyways, I mean, there's a group of people that are pretty influential in, you know, the social media space. Joe Rogan, I mean, these kind of guys, right?
And we love Joe.
They take like all of like the Elon Musk is, you know, all those sort of personalities, and they look at like, okay, there's a commonality between all these guys. Like, yeah, sure, they all get up early, they all try to be healthy, they all, you know, okay, there's all that stuff. The number one thing is persistence. If you look at all the people who have been successful in their careers and their different passions and the different paths that they take, the one thing is like, you look at every single one of them, they all have fallen on their face a million times.
Oh yeah.
It's persistence.
Yeah.
It is persistence. Grit is a word they use a lot.
I love it. Like, that's gotta be on my tombstone someday.
Grit.
I don't care what you say. And I mean, Peter, obviously just meeting you virtually, but you know, just listening.
You're pretty gritty.
Yeah, dude. Listen to your journey and obviously knowing Johnny in person then and now. Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I know two Johnny's, actually. No, I'm just kidding.
I think we all do.
And,
right? Yeah.
You know, but it's just like, you know, it's grit. And it's persistence, and those two things, the skill sets, I think, will figure themselves out. And I think most of us know what we're good at, what we're not good at. But I think what you're developing in redefining, just sort of like that vision and that access, I feel like people will naturally be able to like bring themselves to that. Like,
I think I'd be a little remiss if I didn't ask you, Peter, is there a way to kind of link this to the goal of this particular podcast with like, and it. I know it's a private practice podcast, but like, how do we, healthcare and physicians are in big trouble right now, right? Physician burnout, physician suicide rates are at an all-time high. Orthopedic surgeons lead all of physician suicides at just over 28%. That's scary. It's almost a third of physician suicides being orthopedic surgeons. The guys that are having fun all day, loving their jobs, loving their life, and they're killing themselves, guys and girls, at a rate higher than anybody else. It hasn't been released yet, but one of our, you know, Adam Rosen, orthopedic surgeon that shared his story on LinkedIn and through a YouTube channel, but we had an opportunity to interview him a couple weeks ago, and it was extremely, extremely powerful podcast. But is there a way that you can connect redefine to redefining maybe private practice or independence in medicine? How does that, is there an interplay there?
Yeah, I think we need to, right?
I may have an answer, but we'll do that offline.
So like, suicide's a tough one for me. Sorry.
It's all right.
I've experienced personally losing a good friend to it, and some months before didn't know. And knowing what surgeons go through, like, you guys are always coming in, you're cracking jokes, you're making everyone calm, relaxed. And I know docs are leaving that OR and struggling on that ride home. And that hurts, because you just do such amazing work for so many people, hundreds, sometimes thousands of people a year, right? And that's just it's so hard that you have to deal with that. I think we do need to find ways to help surgeons, redefining what private practice should be, redefining what we expect out of surgeons. In your hands and in your brain and the connection between those, you have a way of doing things that you sometimes don't even realize you know you're doing, right? It's so automatic. It's so intuitive. Your decision-making process, you're not thinking. It's like, do I think when I chew gum? No, when you're doing surgery, there are so many steps that you're doing in an automatic way. And when I think about what that means is that we have all this talent, all these brains. How could we do surgeries faster to get you guys home sooner, right? I love the idea of robotics. I was working in robotics, 20 years ago, when it was really new, and we were doing RoboDocs in Japan, and it was an incredible idea, right? But where we were, in 2001 and where we are now aren't really that far apart. It's still a very long procedure, and we can't add more and more time and then expect you to do 600 cases next year and 650 the year after and 700. And that's the demand that's required. Like, the pace of surgeries are just going to keep going through the roof. Even with all the weight loss drugs that are coming out, there's still going to be a need for people to replace their joints. And we have to find this balance. So if we could bring your knee surgery from, 45 minutes down to 15 minutes, and so all the success and all the balancing, but without any of the time it takes to set up and register, we have an opportunity to give you back 30 minutes from a procedure. And that's a big part of what we're focused on. And you could handle more cases. You could handle more.
And it's not even just the procedure setting up the robotics. We're actually almost thinking that we can take away instrumentation. So we're looking at private practice. We're cutting down trays and instrumentation. We're cutting costs of wrapping the trays, sterilizing the trays, cutting costs on the delta on that aspect as a private practice. You always are looking at every kind of cost that there is, right? So with our AI and our analytics and our Jarvis, right, it can be able to come in and we can be able to place the pin placements with the glass and say, sir, you need to be able to place it right here. You're good. You don't need the blocks, and you cut right real time. I think that's the benefit where we're getting at. We're trying to create all this aspect where we're cutting down costs of time, but we're also cutting down instrumentation. We're cutting down costs. We're cutting down different things that we can be able to not cut corners, but how can we be more efficient? I think that's the biggest thing.
May I challenge you?
Sure. Absolutely.
Everything I've heard thus far, and I mean, there's some things here for the patients, but it has been very surgeon driven, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an experienced guy. I'm a huge Walt Disney fan. When I started Whole Health, the main driving force was Walt in my ear.
Love it.
Talking about how can I make this anxiety provoking experience less anxiety provoking, less nerve wracking, less stressful on myself, on my family, and how can I make it in a weird freaking way enjoyable?
Right.
And who wants to go to Disneyland? I feel like I've done that a couple times. I've had people say, right. I know this is hard for you to grasp. And they've said it. I'm like, that's amazing because that's my goal. But and I still can't quite explain it. But where do you see this going from a patient perspective? Like, are there patient avenues or opportunities with Redefine Surgery?
Well, absolutely. Ultimately, we build technology to understand the human body and motion, and helping a patient understand like where they're struggling today and where they could be later. And then once they're done with surgery and doing the rehab, how to help them stay on top of that and do it correctly. There's so much we can do with capturing that video feed from any iPhone or any video camera and applying models to identify, are they doing this accurately? Are they showing a little bit of slip? Are they showing instability? And make real-time adjustments based upon what you've already done. So the whole idea here is, okay, what is Ryan doing for his patients? And how could we scale Ryan? And there'll be an AI of you at some point that helps their patients and answers their questions because you've done it so many times before. So,
like, can that one talk to my wife too? is that possible?
No, honey, you can't buy that bag.
it's basically no. Setting up the way where you can be able to have an application to be able to have you walk through, but you can be in 1,000 places at once.
Yeah.
And like
a little bit of what we chatted about earlier.
Exactly. 100%. And bringing that to real time and being able to have basically created an AI of Ryan or Dr. Molly. Sorry.
No.
And put. But I'm saying you're considered yeah. Dr. Molly, yeah, yeah. Right? They have that real time feeling of you would talk to them in real time. The AI system would learn all your expertise through clinic, through pre-op.
Post-op, they know how I would answer every question.
Every question. Right. And you could be able to have pre-recorded videos for each segment for question. Then it would filter through that process and be able to have that thing. AI is the future. We're all adapting to it. And it's just creating these algorithms for it. Wouldn't you say, Peter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I just want to comment how amazing it is that you built the idea of what you're doing now on Walt Disney. He's one of my heroes. Read every possible biography and autobiography, any of those, everything I could about him over the years. And it is such a great way to think about your customer. Like, how do you make your customer, for you, the patient, for me, surgeons and patients, how do you make them just extremely happy and just from the moment they walk in the park, so to speak?
Yeah.
So you guys are talking about this and something's coming up for me and Peter. I'm just kind of curious, like in the application in that platform of kind of you're talking from the patient side, right? So, you know, I'm a guy who in my relationships and, our business and the things that we do, I mean, you know, I'm tasked with having challenging conversations with people. And, you know, fortunately for me, I mean, it is a part of life and these are things that happen. And so, you know, I'm okay with that and I can do those things. And so, but when it comes to like my loved ones, like before I got here, I was frantically calling Ryan like, dude, I've got to take my 5-year-old to urgent care. I think I got something going on. Turns out he's got walking pneumonia, which sounds worse than it is.
It's not from the dead mouse either.
It's not. Don't even want to go into the dead mouse thing. Leave it
sidebar,
there.
Sidebar.
Mickey Mouse, Disneyland, yeah. Dead mouse.
Yeah.
There's Walt. We brought full circle Walt, back to
full
Walt.
Full circle. Peter, I'm a helicopter parent. My bad. So, but no, like, you know, I can do all these things because I hate to say this, but like, I can detach myself from certain things and do things that I need to do that aren't going to be necessarily great conversations or outcomes for others. But, you know, I've been tasked with a mission and I'm going to complete the mission. Right. And so I'm cool with that. But when it comes to like my people, like I have a tremendous amount of anxiety, like just a ton. Right. Cause there's so much that like, what if, right? There's that what if. And I know that, you know, your experience with your mom, I'm sure, you know, I had, you know, similar things with not the same outcome at the beginning of the year with mine. And I know the anxiety provoking feeling that that can present. And I'm thinking to myself sitting here like, okay, trauma and like horrible things that happen emergently, like that's a, let's just put that to the side, right? Because like, I don't think that that makes sense because that's going one way or the other, and being able to like navigate that like without someone in front of you is probably pretty shitty and not possible. But I'm thinking like elective surgeries, like Dr. Molly's, right? He does, you know, I don't know, over 900 joints, just him a year. And
not that many, but close.
A lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what if in real time, like that AI, and I know that there are like other entities that are kind of doing something like this, but I'm thinking about for you, like if I could somehow get like an update while in surgery from him, like reassurance of somehow. Like, not necessarily like, hey, yep, we made the cut. We did this. We did, like, I'm not going to, most of the uninitiated.
You don't need real time.
No, but like, know,
you know
but
how
like,
cool that would be, that dude, process? Like Porsche does that, though. Like, your car is in leather. Your car is in stitching. Like,
I don't give a shit about the details, but it's I want to know my dad's okay. I want to know my mom's okay. I want to know my wife, you know.
Well, I think Tommy Walbacher and Charlie DeCook are doing a little bit of this with
OsphiTech.
Yeah, OsphiTech, right?
Yeah.
That visibility for patients, families to see where they're at in that process.
Yep. Like that.
But cool would it be to be able to have that real time video feedback maybe at the same time though, right? Like if you
Have to navigate what that would look
no,
like.
No, I know, but I'm
joking, but a little bit. Like you gotta have it on a little bit of a delay.
Yeah.
Dr. Molly's looking back, he's like,
Hey, we're good. He's dancing.
Sure. But like seriously, because I will tell you, you know, with our son Maverick, when he was born, my wife pushed and pushed and pushed and several hours, and then we went back for a C-section, and I mean, I'm losing my mind.
Oh yeah,
I'm like, this is the person, I can't do this without her. And they bring her in and they do the thing, and you know, been in the OR, and you know, I'm like, oh, who gives a shit? It's just, you know. Well, I walk in and they're like, don't look this way. And I do. And I'm like, oh shit. Like I got to navigate this now. And I, cause it's my person. And I sit down and I'm like, okay, like what's happening? Like what, you know, where we're at. But like, I'm just thinking to myself like, okay.
If somebody could inform you what was going on.
Exactly. Steps, like, I mean, I'm there in real time, 100%. But like, I'm just thinking.
I was right there. Same thing. My ex-wife had that C-section and I didn't know what was going on. And I had twins and one went through the window. One was okay. And I wasn't getting any, I'm like, What's going on? Like,
but,
help me.
But just like that sort of like that reassurance. But like, it's funny because like the OB who was our OB at my wife's OB.
Are you guys not back there for the C-section?
No. Well, no,
we were right next to it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But like family.
But I didn't know what happened.
And
they're
in the waiting room. And it's funny because he says to me, he's just like, we were alluding to you, just kind of giving the thumbs up. He's like, Maverick. He's like, that's a cool name. The movie's coming out. Right around the time that Tom could there, you know. And I'm just like, he's looking at me and he's like, dude. He's like, when I'm talking funny shit about movies, things are good. But like, I held on to that. Like, okay. Yeah. So now I know when doctor talk isn't happening, like we're good.
Yeah.
But like, what if you were able to somehow like, you know, I don't
Can
know,
I
like
something,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, so we've actually gotten feedback that a lot of patients are asking for videos of their surgery, but they think they are.
Until they see it.
They think they want that. But when they actually would see the blood and the bones lying and all that, it starts to become quite surprising. So we've done some interesting things creating cartoons. So imagine that instead of the actual video feed, they would see a moment that looked more like Bob the Builder, where Dr. Molly's character would be in there and you know, doing something, but it would be cartoonish, completely not anything to be afraid of. And it would be a moment in time. So as the AI learns his procedure and understands where he's at, we could say, okay, here are the five clips we're going to share to update them. And it'll probably
here, he just cut the MCL. They're converted to a hinge. Kidding.
Ruh-roh.
There
go those. Sorry. Don't open that tray. Yeah. Wait, they're all fucking open.
Everything's
now.
Open. We're good now. We got all open.
That's
awesome.
No, I love that because
we can really simplify it. Yeah, we can really.
I don't want to say it out loud, but do you remember that what you had talked about like 8 years, 7 years ago?
Oh, yeah. The book. Yeah. So I wanted, and I'm still probably going to do this. I wanted to write a book. a hip book and an ebook for like my family, whether it's kids, grandkids that, I hate to even share this like live, but it would, I mean, hey, can, is my attorney out there? My trademark attorney?
NDAs. Yeah, we're doing this.
Called My Shiny New Hip or My Shiny New Knee. And it was essentially a children's book that had cartoon drawings and illustrations in there showing the process of someone's loved one, parent, grandfather, grandmother, getting a hip or knee replacement and kind of walking them through this scary thing, but humanizing it. And was not only going to illustrate it or write it, but was going to illustrate it as well. So that's one of those things that now that I have a treehouse and I can get away, I'm gonna probably going to go. And
but like, Peter, the, exactly what you were saying, like the caricature version of that.
The cartoon version.
Yeah, is very much so. Like it humanizes it. It's like the blood and the guts and the things that people think they want to see.
Well, if there's guts in a knee replacement, we are...
But you know what I'm saying. I know. Like just the... You know, I don't know. I feel like there's something there because especially like we've talked about it, you know, we've alluded to it on the podcast tonight, like just like mental health and anxiety and all the things that come along with that. Like, you know, listen, I spend a lot of time with this guy and I would feel, I mean, as comfortable as I could with anything. If someone was like, hey, you know, we call him Pops, my dad, if he needed hip replacement, I mean, I would not even think twice. He will be fine and he's going to do great because I know what he is capable of. But like, you know, other people that just, you know, they get the opportunity to hear the folklore, at least like regionally where we are.
Absolutely.
And then meet him. It's not like they spend all this time with him and like, just, I don't know, just like that reassurance piece. I don't know. I feel like that's,
I like where you're going with it though, Peter.
Yeah. Like that.
I'll make your book. I could make your, like, we could make a movie, like a little 5-minute movie of your grandmother's surgery for every patient. And actually a cartoon version of the grandma. And it could be a really interesting thing.
Perfect. A bestseller?
New York.
Absolutely. Yeah. Watch out, Scorsese.
Yeah, here we go.
Pesci narrates all of them.
You think I'm funny? You think I'm funny?
Yeah.
You think funny? Funny how? Am I a clown? Do I amuse you?
I'm getting nervous right now just hearing this. Waiting to get shot in the foot.
Right.
Oh god.
So, Peter, I want to thank you for joining us, sharing your insight. I look forward to, can I get one promise from you? Cause I didn't get a chance to meet you in person here. I know. When are you going to CCGR? Like what day do you know?
I think it's the 12th through 14th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll be there the 11th through the 14th. I'm going Wednesday through Saturday. Going Wednesday, coming back Saturday. I know you probably have a full schedule, but can we carve out a couple hours just to.
Yeah, as many as you want. I can't wait.
Grab dinner or something like that. And
yeah, let's do it.
My wife's going to be coming with me. I'd love for you to meet Karen. Johnny's met her a couple times. And you're going to be down there too, right?
Yes, sir.
It'd be fun to just do maybe...
From Boston maybe to the Orlando. Four of us. We can go to Disney World.
Walt! Here we are, Walt.
Travis is like, damn it.
But I want to
pack my
you.
Bags. We're taking the tram.
The monorail. Yeah. Monorail. I want to thank you for the time. I apologize that we started a little late. That's definitely not my style. And by the way, I'm like, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're 15 minutes late.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very busy day yesterday. I would have had all this stuff set up, but we ran into some technical difficulties. So thank you for being patient with us. And
it was my pleasure. This was great.
Closing thoughts, gentlemen.
No, I'm excited. Thank you for having us. I think it's a great platform to be able to come and talk about redefined surgery and be able to know where we're going with the future. And then that we all need to adapt and know that this is going to come. And I think it's first of the game, and it's being able to have great surgeons like you to be on board and be able to adapt to this and adopt to it and bring us into your OR and learn from you is great for us, because we want to be able to learn from the best and be able to have the best data input and output, right? So we thank you. And I appreciated the day that we had. We had 7 great cases today, and I'm super glad that we're here. And Peter, you were missed, but I mean, we did a great job, and we'll be able to see the content in the next couple of days. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, no, for me personally, it's been a week, but you know, like it's kind of funny when we don't get to do this every other Wednesday or, you know, are intended. Like this podcast sometimes for me is kind of like,
it's therapeutic, isn't it?
It grounds me, man. Oh, and it does. Sure. And like, it just reminds me of like what we're doing and, you know, the private, you know, practice, you know, pendulum that we kind of talk about, but like, just like the, you know, the innovation in medicine and, you know, that we haven't done it all. And it's just like, there are things out there and there are new things out there and things.
It's invigorating for me. Same. Right? Like hearing this kind of stuff, like Peter, I went through my own little journey earlier this year where I was burned out to the point where I was like, I don't know if I want to do this much longer, right? Or am able to do this much longer. But like, I have been reinvigorated over the past several months and conversations like this.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
This is what really does it for me. This is like a shot of adrenaline.
I feel like this is what the community that we're trying to build with Red Carpet, and not just, yeah, I mean, sure, private practice is obviously to the forefront of what we're doing and passion, but like-minded people, right? Absolutely. In industry, and Peter like yourself and Johnny and obviously myself and, you know, Dr. Molly, but it's like, you know, it's like we're all fighting the same fight.
Yep.
And I just am reminded of that every time we have one of these conversations. And it just, it never ceases to amaze me of where these conversations can go and the content that we create when we have these conversations. And yeah, just I'm blessed to be a part of it. So Peter, thank you for your brain and your engineering background and your tenacity and ambition to bring Monday Night Football into Dr. Molly's OR, apparently. I think it's sick. And yeah, no, I mean, I'm pumped to see some. Can I see some videos tonight? I mean,
yeah, we will. Dinner tonight. Yeah. Peter, closing thoughts, comments.
Well, this has been great. And I really appreciate it. You know, the moment you mentioned how you were struggling just a few months back, it really got me thinking around what I've been seeing on LinkedIn for the past 3, 4, 5 years, this amazing collaboration and helping of, you know, surgeon to rep, like you brought up, rep to surgeon, that knowledge sharing, it's what motivates me. It's where a lot of these ideas have come from, is by watching folks like yourself and talk about cases, the good ones, the bad ones, the ones that you struggle with, the ones that you're afraid of, infection. You know, it's such a big issue that people share a lot about. All these unknown conditions that we can someday solve through better technology. That's what I'm really excited about. And that's what I want to be able to keep you all learning and keep you all improving and content. And then shrink that surgery time down, allow you to really enjoy life even more. So thank you for having us.
Of course. Awesome. I guess my closing thoughts are, we've got Phil Jackson. Love it. We've got Dennis Rodman.
Definitely Dennis Rodman.
I'm pretty sure I know who he thinks he is.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take Steve Kerr, dude.
Going to give you Scotty, but you'll take Steve Kerr. We got Scotty Pippen out there.
And Scotty out there.
Luca Lou Molly. So, Peter, thank you. Johnny, thank you. I want to thank all of our viewers, our guests. I encourage you all, subscribe, hit the like button, share this with your friends. I mean, this redefined surgery thing, it's not going anywhere but up. It's going to explode. It already has. It's the wave of the future. It's going to be massive. So thank you guys for tuning in.
Yeah, no.
And
I think the name is in the outcome. I think it will redefine how we look and learn and, you know, view surgery. So
I love Peter's goals. He's like, shoot for, I say this too. It's like, shoot for the moon and maybe you hit the stars, right? But like, or vice versa. But like, set your goals high. Set your goals lofty.
And Saturn, we're coming for you.
Yeah. There we go.
Saturn, Jupiter.
We're the Milky Way.
Yeah. I don't think Pluto's even in the solar system anymore, but we'll come find you.
Which
we'll
planet did they eliminate? Was it Uranus?
Had your kids. Had your wife.
It was Pluto.
Was it Pluto?
Pluto. Luca.
It made it like a star, right?
Is Pluto still in the solar system?
No, it's out.
Pluto.
Oh, that's sad.
Hey.
Thank you. We'll be back in touch soon. Have a great night.
Thanks.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.